Welcome to another episode of Totally Unprepared, January 1st, 2015. Happy New Year. My name is Bill Carnes. This is my co-host, Dave Champion. And together we are
Totally Unprepared.
Bill, what are we going to talk about in our first segment today?
You know, first segment today, what we want to talk about is something that's been pretty popular in the news recently, and that is essentially the clandestine assassination of on-duty police officers that's from coast to coast.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems to be, a bit of an epidemic at this point. And what we want to get into is the causes behind it, why people are doing it from our perception.
Yep.
Keep in mind a couple of former cops here, and what the probable remedies are all the way around.
You know, you've got some very – we talked about this a little bit on the phone the other night.
We're slightly prepared.
We're slightly – ever so slightly. And I know you've got some very very strong and perceptive points on this. But before you launch into why we believe this is, I want to say in advance, I think some of our audience is going to be a little shocked that two people with our background hold the perspective that we do. Would you agree that people are going to be a little surprised?
I would. And keep in mind, oftentimes people have an opinion or perception on a given topic or argument based solely on their position that is not completely qualified. Now, you and I are both former cops, and we're also both active, in fact, firearms and tactics instructor.
Yep.
We have a lot of background involved in this, and we have a lot of time in politics and also in investigation.
Yeah.
So and our collective knowledge really runs the gamut on this entire thing.
And in my case, also use of force instructor, which is relevant to what we're going to be discussing.
Absolutely. Yep. So just so you understand, we have kind of an entire knowledge of this. It's not, say, someone who is vehemently anti-gun and their entire experience with guns has to do with watching television or news programs.
Sure.
Or reading it in the newspaper, never held a gun, never gone through proper gun training. That's essentially a position of pure ignorance.
Yes. Or, be more spot on for this, either totally anti-cop, never having been one, or totally pro-cop, never having been one.
Correct. Yep. Absolutely. So we want to bring all of this together. We have quite a bit of light. Not to say that we are, by any chance, well, I guess we have a more qualified opinion based on life experiences, you know, what we've done, longevity throughout our careers.
So what do you think is going on?
I believe this is reactionary. I believe that cops are being targeted for assassination based on reactionary status for this, really what's been a very long-standing abuse of police authority in various areas around the country. It's relatively rampant, where cops will get out of line with citizens or suspects in a crime, or just in general, they're just in general getting away with abuse of their own authority. And I think people have had it. You see, obviously, the last couple of years, we've had a lot of cases where we've had police officers shoot unarmed suspects, kill them, and face essentially a 00 status, if you will.
Yep.
They're almost licensed to kill, and they're not getting any punishment for it. They're not getting any crimes. You have some insight and some ideas on that. See this as reactionary.
Let me share a thought before you go a little further. One of the things that I don't like about the media narrative of what we're talking about is that it revolves probably about 98% around race. And the problem is not race. Okay? The 8-year-old white girl sitting in the kitchen with a paring knife that was tasered. White cops, white girl. The handcuffed, compliant suspect down in Tennessee a couple months back, choked into unconsciousness. White suspect, well, not even a suspect. He was arrested for some public demonstration. He was just arrested because he was handy. Come here, you. They stuck handcuffs on him. And while he was handcuffed and compliant, a senior officer in his 40s choked him into unconsciousness. White cop, white suspect. Okay? And we could go on, and this is not race. This is sadly, and I cannot tell you how bad I feel that we've come to this point, especially you and I coming from having done the job, they have created an us against them atmosphere. It's not race. It's guys with authority who are not being held accountable against a class that is never permitted to lawfully use violence against them, no matter how much they use violence against the public.
Absolutely. And very, very well stated. You know, for a long time, you have various people that might be in situations that have been abused by police officers. And other times, you have those that just empathize with some who have been abused by police. Now, not to say that everybody who's out on the street that comes in contact with police are abused.
No.
That's
no.
not the case.
Or we're not saying that all police officers do this.
No, we're not. No. But what I would like to get out there is my own experience, mm-hmm. and I'll be absolutely blatant about this, and a lot of cops are not going to like this. Probably a third of the cops that I worked with, if they weren't cops, they'd have been locked up. It was a very fine line.
Oh, let me phrase it a different way. If there was proper accountability in law enforcement, they'd be locked up.
As a matter of fact, that's very true. We're talking about people that were, you know, bully mentality.
Yep.
They essentially get together in kind of a gang mentality. And really what it starts from the squad you're on and the supervisor, the sergeant who runs it. Are they going to tolerate this or not? Are they going to keep their squad wholesome, or are they going to allow them to abuse their authority? And it all starts from there. It goes up to the lieutenants, the captains, the commanders, the police chief or the sheriff, whatever you might have. What is the culture of your individual squad all the way through your, maybe it's a precinct or an area command or through the entire department?
Now, let me validate that for you. I rolled up. There was some incident had just occurred. I had five or six officers under my command that were at that incident. I rolled up after the fact, and they were doing the little post-powwow. You know how that goes, right? And I got out of my unit, and I walked over, and I started talking to them. Hey, how did it go down? What happened? What are the particulars? And while I'm talking, I noticed that one of my guys has removed his name tag. Okay, these were sewn on. These were tactical uniforms. I noticed he had removed the name from his name tag, or removed the name tag from his uniform. And I said, where's your name tag? And one of the other guys looked at him out of the corner of his mouth. He said, told you. And I said, when we're done here, one of these officers is going to take you back to the station. You're off tonight. You don't work anymore tonight. The reason was there was only one reason for him to take his name tag off. Right?
He was doing something he shouldn't have been doing.
He was planning to. Right? So I sent him home. It wasn't like, oh, don't do that anymore. Tomorrow, you better have your name tag.
Yeah.
Do your dirt tonight.
Tee-hee, ha-ha, no. That was funny. Carry on.
For something as, I think to some people, seemingly trivial, I recognized where it was going and sent him home immediately.
Absolutely.
That normally doesn't happen today.
Now, what we're talking about here is people who have, at one point in time, had enough. It started with the murder of two police officers eating lunch in Las Vegas just a few months ago.
I remember, yes.
Yeah, there was another couple of cops in New York City recently. There's some on the West Coast that this recently happened to. Of course, there's been a lot of violence outside of St. Louis with this whole thing in Ferguson. It's really what it's, I think it's coming down to, Dave, is the idea of retribution against those who've been oppressing us.
Yes.
If you would look at the citizens that were in Nazi Germany that were pissed off about the Nazis and the SS, they started to have a bit of a rising against them. I'm not comparing cops to the SS and the Nazis. What I'm doing is I'm comparing human nature to having oppression. And the militarization of our police forces, which almost entirely comes from federal grant money, not your local taxes, but federal money that comes down to arm and militarize the police. Lack of accountability on the streets. We've talked about good cops versus bad cops. A truly good cop stops a bad cop from doing something wrong against a citizen or a suspect that shouldn't be going on, but yet the otherwise good cop, and I hate using the air quotes,
yeah, yeah.
The otherwise good cop should stop them from doing that, but they don't. So they all become guilt by association.
And we talk about lack of accountability. Some of the good cops who have been physically interfering with needless or illegal violence by their fellow officers are being suspended or terminated.
They are. There was a case, I think it was about 5 years ago now, where you had a Florida Highway Patrol officer, female trooper, mm-hmm. that pulled over mm-hmm. a Miami-Dade officer who was driving on the freeway at speeds up to 120 miles an hour, not rolling code, off duty, still in his marked unit in uniform, screaming up the highway because he was late to his off-duty job. She pulled him over. They were in a car chase for 4 minutes and 57 seconds on a crowded freeway at doing speeds well in excess of 100 miles an hour before he finally pulled over. She arrested him. It cost him his job, and it nearly cost her career because of all of the other cops so pissed that she would pull over and do the right thing against another cop. She was literally run out of the county. They reassigned her to a different part of the state and gave her a job where she was not out on the street doing something more administrative. You know, we need cops like that to stop the other cops.
I used to live in California. And, of course, Vegas is sort of a little...
I'm sorry.
Sort of a little entertainment center when you live in Southern California, right? And the ethos used to be that if you were LA County Sheriff, LAPD, any Southern California law enforcement, and you came screaming down the 15 freeway well in excess of the speed limit, okay, and a CHP lit you up, California Highway Patrol, if you backed off and put your badge in the window, they would shut it down and go on their way. Okay?
Imagine that.
Right. And those are stories that I don't think – now, that doesn't happen anymore. That was a few decades ago. But that's the kind of thing it telegraphs – what goes on behind closed doors, that how police support police, even when their conduct is completely wrongful.
Yeah, so I think to shore this up, if good cops will step up and at the moment other cops are doing wrong things and stop them and say, hey, we can't have this, man. You got to back it down. This is not right. It's wrong. It's going to get more of us killed. If the police handle it internally amongst themselves within the ranks, this sort of thing will stop quickly. And we don't have to worry about other cops being assassinated because we're going to immediately see a change within the industry.
And the alternative is more police assassinations and more needless funerals and more violence all around.
And we don't need any of that. We don't need civil war with cops.
And we'll be back right after these words. And we are back, and it's time for all right, what is up with people using social media to create dissension and division in our society? Now, I happen to think social media is an awesome tool. I cannot even overstate how valuable it is to spreading important messages throughout our internet community. I think it has, in many ways, it has dispowered the small group that used to control media. It allows positive messages and information to get out, factual data. It allows shows like this to be seen far outside the markets that you used to be constrained to. However, like any tool, it can be misused. And that is exactly what I've been seeing happening a lot lately, is it's being misused. I'll give you an example. This sort of spawned my desire to do this segment today. Suddenly, I see all over social media a video, short is probably no more than about 3 minutes, that purports to be Michael Brown. You know, Michael Brown was the one that was shot by Darren Wilson that caused the Ferguson riots. Purports to be Michael Brown beating some guy up. And you watch the video, all you can tell is that it's a big, thick, kind of lug, you know, just kind of bulky black guy, young, much younger than Michael Brown was when he died, beating up a skinny kid. Two black guys beating, one guy beating up the other guy. There's absolutely no validation that it's Michael Brown. There's absolutely no way to tell if it's Michael Brown. There's nothing offered in the video that would give you any confidence or credibility that it's Michael Brown. Yet, it is posted with the words, "This is Michael Brown, the real thug. Yes, this is the real guy that Darren Wilson shot." And I'm going to tell you my experience with social media is the odds are overwhelming. It is not Michael Brown. Now, What are some of the other mischaracterizations or outright lies that people are telling on social media to create division and angst amongst people rather than trying to tell the truth and bring people together? Well, you'll remember right after Darren Wilson shot Michael Brown and it became worldwide news, there were all sorts of theories about what had happened and why it had happened and that Darren Wilson was savagely attacked. And so I'd like to show you the actual picture from Darren Wilson's medical exam at the hospital after the shooting. Pat, will you put that up for me? All right. Now, you see that he looks fairly normal. Thank you, Pat. Now, the reason that people might not like that factual real-life picture is it doesn't fit the public perception of how somebody should look when they claimed to have been fighting for their life, fighting for their very survival. They had to shoot or they were going to die. They were in fear for their life. That picture would not engender those thoughts. Okay? So it left open the possibility, a question mark, if you will, as to the narrative of what happened to Darren Wilson. Now, I'm not saying what did or did not happen. I don't care where we stand today. We will never know. Okay, there's two people who know. One's not talking. Well, one is telling his version, and the other one is dead. If we had body cams, we would know. As it is, we don't know. But because that picture that I just showed you allowed there to be a question mark in the narrative, let me show you the photograph that people posted instead in order to engender an emotional response in favor of Darren Wilson. Pat, will you put that up for me? Now, that was posted far and wide by social media saying, this is Darren Wilson. This is what he looked like. This is why he had to shoot Michael Brown. Thank you, Patrick. Obviously, that's a load of hooey. That's not Darren Wilson, as you can clearly see. But people were willing to out and out lie if they knew that was not Darren Wilson or mischaracterize in order to get people to accept their version of what they wanted you to believe was right and wrong. Now, another example of that I saw just this morning, and it was a meme that somebody posted. Pat, will you put that up for us? Okay. Now, this meme talks about that there's some people who are celebrating the death of cops, but they're offended by sleep deprivation of terrorists. Thank you, Pat. Now, I have a very wide circle of friends and acquaintances. I have more friends than I think any man is entitled to, and I'm very grateful for that. I have a vast amount of friendly acquaintances and acquaintances on Facebook alone. I think I have 1,100 Facebook friends. Okay. Because of the television show and my years teaching firearms, my circle of acquaintances is broad. I know, for instance, I have friends who are, in fact, high school students. I have friends who are in their 70s and everywhere in between. I have friends that have a strong dislike for police officers. I have friends who are 30-year cop veterans, okay? And everywhere across. And you know what? With this broad overview that I have, and this wonderful selection of friends from all walks of life, despite what that meme portrayed, I don't know anyone, zero, who is celebrating the death of those cops. Likewise, I know a lot of people, myself included, who are adamant that we should not torture. But I don't know anybody who believes we should not practice sleep deprivation when we are in possession of somebody who we believe has intel that we want. Sleep deprivation is not torture. So my point is, somebody takes that photograph, which undoubtedly has absolutely nothing to do with celebrating any police deaths. It's just a photo off the internet. They go to a meme generator. They put some words in there. And the words that appear above about celebrating police deaths are BS. Nobody's doing that. At least it would be so statistically small that it's irrelevant. And I don't know anybody who says sleep deprivation is torture. So the entire paradigm is false. And yet it is used to create an emotional response in a negative sense and create angst and divisiveness in our society. There's my rant. What do you think, Bill?
You know, we became victims of this back in the 90s for the first time on a national scale when we saw a picture of Nicole Brown Simpson on the cover of the National Enquirer, all bruised up. When we later were able to see the actual photograph, and there were interviews with the individual who worked for National Enquirer, who was told to Photoshop this thing up and give her bruises and make her look all beaten and bloody. And of course, they ran a story that this is what Nicole looked like after an argument at the hands of OJ when he smacked her around a bit. And I think that really kind of started this. And now it's so easy. I mean, you and I could go home and do it on our computers and create something and put it up on a Facebook page. And considering the number of followers that you have or some of the folks that I could put it out to, that it would actually gain some traction and potentially become viral.
Right.
And we're all victims of this. And it's unfortunate that it's one of these things where human beings that should be exercising some level form of self-control, that otherwise, if they don't and they put something out like this, they can be anonymous, faceless, they can just create a stir, and if somebody else gets harmed, what do they care? It's not them. It's really sad, is what it is. People that do this are sad.
And I think in a way this ties in a bit to what we were talking about in the first segment. Because while you and I recognize, having come out of the industry, the law enforcement industry, we recognize abuse of police conduct when we see it, where the average citizen may not immediately realize that's wrong. We recognize it as wrong at an earlier level.
Sure.
But there are people who are adamantly pro-cop no matter what cops do, and there are people that are adamantly anti-cop no matter what good works cops do.
Which just goes to show us both groups that are on either side, one side or the other, don't know all of the whole story.
Yes, but yet they want to stake out their ground, and they want to be right. They don't want to be correct. They want to be right. Okay? And they're willing to employ these kind of things that I just showed in order to influence people. Now, the outright lies or the mischaracterizations, or as I showed that last meme, just a paradigm that is completely false and its sole purpose is to get people emotionally riled up. And at a time in our nation's history when I think we have more than enough to be properly riled up about, do we really need to be driving the population into more and more and more intense emotional turmoil? I don't understand where the mileage is for people in trying to create these false paradigms and then promoting them.
And you and I both know intelligent people that have been duped. You showed those pictures with Darren Wilson, the one that came out where he's all beaten up. It's not even Darren Wilson in there. I had a discussion with a group of well-mannered gentlemen who are intelligent people. One of which said, look, this is the picture of what happened to the cop, Darren Wilson. This is Darren Wilson. This is why he shot the Michael Brown.
No, we're talking about the fake picture.
Yeah, the fake picture. Okay. This is why he shot Michael Brown. And I wasn't buying it because this is a brand new picture that had just come out. And that's where I basically sat back and I said, it reminds me of the National Enquirer and their photograph of Nicole Brown Simpson. To which, well, what do you mean? This is the cop. How do we know the cop? How do I know it's the cop?
Right.
How do I know that that's the cop? The thing is the police department in Ferguson doesn't know the whole story. I seriously doubt that the Facebook story that you read has the whole story. So therefore, the jury's out. I'm not convinced. And I had a number of these guys pissed off at me having been a cop say, well, how could you not believe it? How could you tell? I'm not taking anybody's side. I'm taking the side of I don't know. And your source of that picture is unconfirmed. That's why the press, rightfully so, generally does and certainly always should second source information.
Of course, they didn't during Ferguson.
Well, no, because everybody wants to be the first one out.
That's right.
They'll spit out all the information. You remember 9/11. They said that there was a car bomb that went off in front of the Capitol, when in fact that wasn't the case. There was all kinds of things that they were reporting that didn't happen, but it was not second source, but they were putting it out there to be the first.
Yeah. I think really what, to a great extent, this distills down to is I don't understand why people want to create disharmony. There's enough things going on in our nation right now that we need to be legitimately concerned about. And not only do I think creating false disharmony is harmful in itself, but it distracts us from focusing on the things that are legitimate, and we should have our focus on that. We shouldn't have our focus on these false paradigms that are being presented for reasons that are beyond me.
Dave, I refer to it as staring at the peas and forgetting about the steak.
There we go. And we'll be back right after these words.
Welcome back to Totally Unprepared, and now it's time for... You know what really grinds my gears? It's people who take a false bit of information to try to create some sort of sympathy for their position or their plight, while all the time ignoring true facts against their argument for something else. I'll give you an example by a story. Just a few months ago, we had a very large community event that spans about 4 days. It's a big fall festival, if you will, in the town where I live, here in Pahrump, Nevada. And it was one particular evening. It was the Saturday evening of this event, which is the biggest night. I'm there with a few friends of mine, my brother. Several of us are wearing our handguns exposed, which is completely legal where we live and very, very common, in fact. You can't go to any supermarket or department store or anything such as that around town without seeing several people carrying exposed handguns. Came across a friend of mine who is also a very conservative, liberty-minded guy, much as myself, much as my co-host Dave Champion, who recently married a woman who is a very, very liberal Democrat. As a matter of fact, their marriage was only a couple of weeks old. And we got into a discussion based on another fellow saying, hey, you know, you're one of the only people not carrying a handgun today. Ha, 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 joking around with this lady. Her response was, I don't believe in guns. So I stepped in and I asked, I said, come again? You don't believe in guns? No, I don't believe in guns. So I said, do you believe in trees? And I pointed out a grove of trees standing behind her. Do you believe in trees? There they are, because here's a physical apparatus known as a gun, and there's more on the hips of these other fine gentlemen. How can you not believe in guns? Her response was, well, I'm a Democrat. I don't believe in guns. False argument. I know plenty of Democrats who believe in guns and carry guns and shoot guns. Then what I got into was a situation where we had, the first time we had met, we were in a meeting to where it was a Republican meeting, and she came in with her newfound Republican husband as a registered Democrat who had worked on many Democratic issues and campaigns, and she was recognized when we have guests come in, we look up, check the commonly known public information voter registration. Sure enough, there she was. And one of the folks who was checking that asked her, you know, I see your name. Are you a registered Democrat? She said, well, yes, I am. Okay. Well, our records show that you are. Unfortunately, this is closed to Democrats. We don't allow Democrats into the meeting. It's election season. We're talking about, you know, various things. So we politely asked her to wait outside until the meeting was over, to which, of course, she was very ticked off about that. And I told her, I said, I'm sorry that that event happened, but you should have known better not to come in. Certainly your husband should have known better not to bring you in. To where she said, oh, that's okay. I actually checked with someone and I found out it's a constitutional rights violation to ask me if I'm a Democrat, which is completely ridiculous. And I asked her, I said, well, where did you come up with that? And the short answer was, she called a friend of hers, who was another liberal left-leaning Democrat, to complain. That person sympathized with her and said, oh, you know, that's a violation of your constitutional rights to be asked if you're a Democrat. Horse hockey. That is total BS. It's public information, and you can make a choice whether to be registered to vote or not. And if you are registered to vote, you have a myriad of options on how to be registered with various political parties or none. And it's public information. And you get a card that says so. When it comes to violation of your rights, it's generally about things that you cannot change, be it the color of your skin, where you were born, oftentimes the religion that you practice. Those are the sorts of things that would be a violation of your rights. You can be asked, but you don't have to answer. We had the information, and it was merely a pleasant way of entering into the conversation without saying, hey, you don't belong here, get out. So I explained this to this lady, and I said, and on top of it, it's interesting that you somehow created out of thin air this plight that you now claim is a constitutional violation of your rights, which not only is it not, it doesn't even come close to it. But yet in the same breath, you told me you don't believe in guns. Well, that's part of the Second Amendment. If you look at the first 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights, there's roughly 24 rights that are listed in there, only one of which says shall not be infringed. So here is a quintessential example of someone creating a plight to try to gain sympathy for themselves rather than using their own noggin, yet ignoring longstanding court rules from the United States Supreme Court, countless lower courts, as well as the Second Amendment itself that says shall not be infringed, all of these rulings working on behalf of the citizens that, yes, not only do we believe in guns, Dave, but the courts the courts protect our constitutionally protected rights to carry guns and have guns.
You know, I love that story you said about the woman coming to the Republican Party meeting. The parallel that conjures up in my mind is a police anti-gang unit is having their meeting where they're discuss their tactics when they hit the streets tonight to locate and arrest gang members, and yet somebody from MS-13 or the Crips or the Bloods demands to sit in on that meeting.
Yeah, and if they're asked to leave, they're somehow their rights are violated.
Right, because somebody who's active in the Democratic Party, perhaps it's a bad idea during an election cycle to have them sitting in on the Republican strategy meeting.
Yeah, it's infiltrating. And what really drives me nuts about things like this, and it just, that's an example right there. It's a perfect example. But it's people who would like to create some sort of fodder around their plight to gain some sort of sympathy and feel victimized because they made a poor decision.
By the way, I want to be clear about this. I wasn't comparing Democrats to MS-13 or Crips or Bloods.
Yeah, I saw the wink. I saw the wink.
Yeah, you know, and then the part about manufacturing a right.
Okay. Absolutely. Happens regularly.
Yes. And, you know, I happen to be one of these people who believe that our government here in the United States is attempting to actively move away from, pushing itself away from the table of unalienable rights. Oh, unalienable rights, we're not going to have that discussion. Okay? But unalienable rights is entirely different than just spouting off. I think there was an early U.S. Supreme Court decision where one of the justices in his concurring opinion was talking about inalienable rights, and he said, making a list of inalienable rights would not be so difficult as it would be tedious because they're virtually unending. But sitting in on a closed association meeting when you're with the other association and claiming that when by the way, you're part of the other competing group.
Oh, get out.
Constitutional violation. You asked me if I'm part of the other competing group.
Yeah. I'm a board member of PepsiCo and I want to sit in and listen to a board meeting at Coca-Cola.
Right.
Get out.
Yeah.
So it's just the manufacturing of things and people trying to really, they're deflecting their own actions or responsibilities off to becoming a victim. You and I both worked at a firearms training organization where there was someone who had previously worked there during the time I was there. You were coming in as a student when they were there. And it's a male-dominated industry.
True.
Not because it has to be. It just ends up being that way.
Human nature being what
it is. It is. And there was a female staff member there that no matter what this person did incorrectly on regular basis, somehow was able to turn it around to where she was the victim all the time.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
And finally, I was called into a meeting with the management based on it. It's like, look, you made poor decisions on this, that, and the other. I am responsible for correcting this action, and you don't like the way I'm handling it when I've been empowered by the very person in management you're taking this to. And that's where I explained in the meeting with the management, look, you constantly create yourself as always being the victim. Example A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, and on through the entire alphabet with all these examples. I said, no, tell me how you are constantly the victim in life. You manufacture this. I believe you do these things for attention. And it has nothing to do with the industry. It had to do with that individual. And that individual wanting to do whatever the hell they could and expecting that if they were called the victim enough and got all the sympathy, that then they could then move on and do more and more things unincurred, okay, uninterrupted.
I have a couple observations about this. First of all, how could she constantly be a victim? Well, that's real simple. You were her supervisor. But here's the deal. In all seriousness, I've worked around people who have that same proclivity. And what they're really trying to do is stack up, not by credibility, but by volume, an argument that whoever their supervisor is, whoever the authority figure over them is, needs to stop. Hence giving them a much greater latitude in how they can conduct themselves. And the organization that we were talking about was very fortunate that you were her supervisor, because a lot of people, especially more so today, because, you know, political correctness, they would have caved to that. They would have said that there's this preponderance of her accusations, okay? The preponderance of, not the accuracy of them, not the validity of them, that may be zero, but there's a preponderance of accusations, I better back off.
Yeah,
you didn't do that.
What it turns out to be in all different situations like this, it generally ends up being someone who hasn't got the capacity to work at the level at which is expected. So they go outside to do other things that they believe they can get away with in order to somehow be accepted there. I can't rise to this level, so I'm going to try to do something over in this area. And if that's accepted, that will make up for my lacking in these other areas. Just either get it together and do the right thing, or shut the hell up. Don't make yourself a victim. Any of you who are out there, you know people who do this, tell them to just shut the hell up. Those of you who do it, please take my advice and shut the hell up. Just do what's right for you and everybody else, not what you believe is right for your own cause. What about me? What about me? What about me? Forget about all about you.
Yeah.
What is good for the group, the organization, society as a whole, whatever the issue is, and start doing the right thing.
Put the purpose before yourself.
Rather than using what is the term, Dave, where it is all of the actions that you do serve to the end goal? There's a term
living
for it.
Living for a higher purpose?
No. It's
but the theory we're talking about, though, is exactly what made you and I so good at law enforcement, because we put the purpose ahead of our personal agenda.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was asked by one of the very highest of ranking people at the Knight County Sheriff's Department what my goal was when I was with Las Vegas Metro. I never had any desire to make rank. I told him what my career path was and why it was that way. I never wanted to make rank. I wanted to do the right thing.
And we'll be back right after these words.
Welcome back to our final segment for Totally Unprepared, January 1st, 2015. Again, Happy New Year to everybody. We got a listener email from, I'm sorry, a viewer email.
We both used to do radio. That's where that comes from. Yeah.
We got a viewer email from one of our viewers who is in Utah. We're talking about a guy who is a military veteran, active duty military veteran, served time in the Middle East, has a family, been working hard his whole life, never had any trouble with the law, has kids coming up, and is very concerned.
What's up, Jared?
Jared is very concerned about the police abuses that we've been talking about throughout the show. Started with the first segment, a little bit about what you were talking about.
Yeah, let me interrupt you for a second. We should tell the audience, his email was completely separate from our decision to cover this topic. We decided to cover the topic. We opened the email inbox, and there that was.
So within an hour.
Would dovetail nicely.
Yeah, within an hour. And Jared has concerns. You know, how is it that I can conduct myself so I am not potentially being victimized by one of these rogue cops, which has become an epidemic in this country? Or if it hasn't become an epidemic, certainly learning about it through all of the fast, immediate media around the country, we've learned that it's been an epidemic, and now everybody's learning about it. And he wanted us to discuss how he can help to avoid this if he comes in contact with cops.
You know, that's a very interesting question. And there's the Dave Champion answers that I apply for myself, and you probably have them as well, which might not work so well for people who don't have our background. I think it goes without saying in this modern era that the very best thing you can do, and fortunately prices have come way down in the last couple of years, is get your vehicle wired. Now, let me give you an example of what can happen if you have your vehicle wired for sound and video. Now, I'm going back to the point, this story is probably 8 or 9 years old when the technology was expensive. There was a young man, I was living in Antelope Valley, California at the time, and there was a young man that was pulled over repeatedly by one deputy. He lived in a rural part of the Antelope Valley, and there was an older deputy who worked that area. And this kid was probably, at the time, he was about 20.
Was this a catch and release for the cop?
Constantly citing him. And they were all bogus. Okay. This kid would see the speed sign. He'd make sure his cruise control was on exactly what the speed sign says. This cop would pull him over and write him for 20 over. Okay. Stuff like that. He'd come to a complete stop at a stop sign. The cop would be sitting there. He'd sit there for 30 seconds to make sure that there was no question he stopped. He would then go. The cop would pull him over and cite him for a rolling stop. Okay. This cop had something against this kid. Well, the father was in the entertainment industry, and he was like a cameraman or something and very technical. So they put a camera system in this young man's car that one camera was on the speedometer, one camera, these were hidden cameras, faced out the window, and one camera faced backwards. Okay? And it wasn't but about 10 or 14 days later that this cop pulled, it was time and date stamped as well. This cop pulled him over. And remember, as he's pulling as he comes up behind him and turns on his lights, it's recording what's on the speedometer. Okay? And it was reaching the point where the kid was going to have his license revoked.
Okay? Because right, for too many moving violations.
For too many moving violations, which is why they went to this exceptional measure. And so the kid was very polite, and the guy came over and wrote him for like 20 over. And the kid said to him, of course, the cop doesn't know everything's now being monitored. The kid said, "Why are you constantly doing this to me? Why are you constantly giving me these bogus citations?" And the cop said, "You know, if you lip off to me again, I'm going to pull you out of the car and beat your ass." And blah, blah, blah. Okay. And so at that point, the kid said, "That's fine, sir. Allow me to sign that citation. Thank you very much." And they ended up, the cop was terminated, and all of those previous tickets were rescinded. But this speaks to the power. Now, it didn't solve this problem up front, which, of course, I think is one of Jared's concerns. But it does speak to the power of monitoring cops. And I think we've all seen, there's a video out there of a cop that he's talking to a trucker who's in his big rig. Okay, and the cop is being abusive and just a bastard. And the guy in the big rig, he says, "I want you to know that my truck is rigged for video and audio, and everything you're doing is being recorded." Attitude change was
absolute.
Instantaneous.
Yes. Okay. Which oftentimes, even if you don't have your vehicle wired, that could work. Now, and we're talking specifically if it's a vehicle stop. A lot of opportunities to come into contact with police other than that. Now, Jared, if you or anybody else watching this, you live in a specific area, you tend to travel in the same areas, you only encounter maybe a couple different departments, be it your state highway patrol or your county sheriff or local police, something like that, and you're concerned about this, it's probably not a bad idea to obey the speed limit and traffic laws. Not a bad idea at all.
The place to start.
That's the best place to start. And the other thing is to learn a little bit about the department. You don't necessarily need to go out and meet every cop and buy him lunch and, hey, how you doing? However, if you have the opportunity...
The police chief or sheriff might be a good idea.
That might be a good one. If you happen to be out and maybe they're fueling up gas or at a restaurant or something, and just say, hi, how are you? Or nice to meet you, my name is. Mm-hmm. Something along that line. That's all you need to do. You know, I just want to say hi and thank you for what you're doing. And that's called preventative measures. It really is.
Yeah.
Because especially right now, cops are not getting too many hellos and pats on the backs nationwide. There was a case not long ago here in town where a cop was eating lunch and at a restaurant he'd eaten that before and was in uniform. And the waitress said, you know, your lunch has been paid for. And he rightfully said, no, I can't accept a free lunch. And she said, I didn't say the lunch was free. Someone else paid for your lunch for you. Well, who was it? They didn't want to be said. That was just somebody who was, you know, hey, thank you. You don't have to go that far. But the thing is if you get in a situation with a cop and they are polite, professional, and courteous, all you have to do is be the same and thank them. Hey, I want to thank you for being polite, professional, and courteous. Do that relatively early, but not your first thing, and establish that more professional relationship. If they're coming at you in a more aggressive stance, you could then say, I want you to be advised that there's audio and video recording of this incident, and I appreciate your polite, professional, and courteous behavior for, you know, for this remaining time. Okay. Something along that line.
Also, in big city, but this is not universal, but in most big cities, there is a policy that if you request to speak to a supervisor, they will roll a supervisor. Now, if you're being cited for a broken taillight and you ask for a supervisor, it's unlikely you're going to get one.
Yeah, don't expect that
right.
to happen.
But if they've got you out of the car, they're acting like complete sphincters, they're demanding to search your car, they're telling you they're going to get a canine and they're going to keep you on the side of the road for an hour while they summons up a canine unit, at that point you can say, I want to speak to a supervisor. And in the big city environment, you're probably going to get a supervisor, and hopefully the supervisor will cause the patrol officers to take maybe a different demeanor with you if it's not the demeanor you're getting is not deserved. However, I want to caution you, if you live in a rural setting or you're out in the middle of no place and you get pulled over by a state trooper and you ask for a supervisor, that's going nowhere, because a supervisor may be 3 hours away. If, say, Nevada, a huge state, if you're in mid-Nevada, you get pulled over.
If you're in Duckwater, Nevada, it's highly unlikely if you get stopped by a deputy or a highway patrol that they're going to have a supervisor within a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And keep this in mind. The Supreme Court has ruled that the police have 60 minutes as a maximum to make a decision on what to do with you. Unless you are now charged, you are under arrest and they're doing investigation. If you are not charged, you are not cited. Keep in mind, a citation is a cursory arrest. In Nevada, there is no such thing as an infraction. In a lot of states, there's, like in California, there's an infraction, which you cannot be arrested for. Then a misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, felony. Nevada, it's different. States are different. In Nevada, there's no infraction. It's misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, felony. You can get cited for misdemeanors. However, you can also go to jail for a misdemeanor. The causal effect is it common? I worked with a guy who was a complete jackass. He arrested someone for illegal use of a horn. I was in jail booking someone at the same time he was in there. I was booking them on a felony drug charge. He was doing misdemeanor illegal use of a horn. The booking agent behind the glass said, well, this is the first time in history, according to my computer, anyone's ever been booked on this. And he did it just because it was contention by cop. Right. He was contentious to the cop. But my point is if you get stopped, within 60 minutes, you have to be released. The cops don't have 60 minutes to complete their investigation. They have to complete their work in a timely manner. They have up to 60 minutes to justify that, but they don't have exactly 60 minutes. I told you I've got 60 minutes to do whatever I want.
And
no, you've got to complete your work, and it better be done within 60 minutes.
The accepted time frame when they believe they have reasonable suspicion and are conducting the reasonable investigation, that's typically 30 minutes. That they have 30 minutes to ask questions, to look for adjacent witnesses and so forth. If they can't go from reasonable suspicion to probable cause in 30 minutes, they have to cut you loose.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. But the thing is to be professional with cops. I have had a number of disagreements.
Oh, and that may make you actually more professional than them. If you take the high road.
Yeah, you'll oftentimes raise up a cop that's having a bad day. I've had a few disagreements with cops for one reason or another, be it a traffic stop or some questioning incident, where they decide to kind of go down the road of a little bit of gutter language or just a bad attitude. And I check them and I tell them, I'm not sure, you know, I'll advise them something along the line. I'm not sure what may have been part of your day up to this point, but
it's going to get worse if you keep this up.
Mine's been pretty good at this point. I'm not sure why you're taking this aggressive stance, but I have to ask you to, you know, to really raise it up a notch, or I'm going to have to insist that a supervisor come here because you seem that you might need some supervision.
Yeah. You know, I actually was pulled over by an NHP, which I've had generally wonderful experiences with since I've come to Nevada. My one singular bad experience was I was pulled over. He was completely in the wrong. I shared my background with him. I shared what the law was. And he looked at me and he said, well, that's not how I was trained in the academy. It's like, yeah, okay, because the academy is training you in incorrect procedure, right?
Yeah, garbage in, garbage out.
It wasn't. He was just covering his fanny.
Of course. I had the same thing with a local deputy. Said that he could cite me for the speed he had to, his overtaking speed. He had to go 62 and a 45 to cite me. He could write me for 62. I informed him that was not the case.
All right. Thank you, my friends, for being here with Bill Carnes and I, where we are
totally unprepared.
And we'll see you next week. Take care.